Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're about to take a tour of the American Visionary Arts Museum with its founder and director, Rebecca Hoffberger. Rebecca is a native of Baltimore. She started the museum in 1995. The American Visionary Art Museum is an incredible museum over on Key Highway in Federal Hill, named as one of the five best museums, not just in America, but in the world. It specializes in the art of visionary and self-taught artists. Every year, the exhibit changes. This year's exhibit is called The Art of Storytelling, Lies, Enchantment, Humor, and Truth. Rebecca and I went outside and looked at these incredible mosaics that line the walls of the American Visionary Arts Museum that are designed by children who are part of our juvenile justice system.
There was a 78% dropout rate from the Southern High School. And so we started adopting, because we always knew that these plain, curved concrete walls, we wanted to make it a mosaic, recycled community project for youth at risk. But then that became Digital High School. They took out the shop. You know, it became all electronic.
Right, right.
And so we moved on, and we moved on in an amazing way to speak with, to work with kids from, like, the William Donald Schaefer House, etc. And so these mosaics, and I can prove to you that the kids really do have a lot of say in how they come down. They have to work together to make, like, here, as we turn the building, it goes from the sunrise on the east side, and you'll see the moon come up.
Oh, and the reflected in the pieces.
In the mirrors, and then the cobalt glass all over the world in the glass industry is known as Baltimore glass because Noxzema, comes from the word Noxzema. Noxzema and Broma Seltzer were made here for over 120 years. So as it comes around, you see the little marijuana leaf,
Aha, there is a marijuana leaf in that.
That they stuck in the mosaic, so you know it was kid-driven. But otherwise, they learn.
Old people might have done it, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You see the sun sets, and then the moon comes up, and then the constellation that Harriet Tubman used to guide people out from the south of slavery is up, the only real figurative part in there. And so when people are klutzes, wow, and they break their family dishes, they can give them to us. And so we've had a four-year time where we have had no funding to go on with this formerly federally funded program. There have been some private sector, like Annie Casey gave us a lovely grant as well. But now we're going to be starting it up to finish the crown on top of the building and the back of the building of our main building, the Jim Rouse, the Zambel Krieger building. Well, you see the concrete wall there?
Right here, yeah.
That will get covered in night sky, but going into the green glass of recycled old bottles and things of the Aurora Borealis. And then you can't see it from here, but there's a 12-foot crown on the building that you can see from the other side.
Right, right.
And that will be all like jewels. I've been trying to get to Nadia Swarovski to get us a lot of crystals in there. Too, it hasn't happened yet, but I think it will one day. So people come. We got listed on the world's top 10 most blinged out buildings in the world. And the rest are like in Dubai and London and Tokyo. It's really interesting. And we didn't, you know, lobby for that. But it's really a metaphor for shining youth, shining walls. And what I love it when I wear the jewelry that the kids learn to make. I'm wearing some now.
Oh, I love
that's
that.
Old.
Same kids who made these?
This is actually by Andrew Logan, who has taught the kids. We cycle them with different mirrored artists when we have the program running. And again, it's going to be relaunched this year. And what's amazing is that people stop me and say, oh, my God, I love that jewelry, that shiny jewelry. And I get to say, yeah, did you know that 90% of the children who are incarcerated in Baltimore City prison system for youth are in for nonviolent crime. 10% are in for violent crime. So it's so humbling. And frankly, they're like the best kids we've ever worked with. We love partnering and mentoring these children. And a lot of our staff, you know, three came from the homeless shelter. They know how hard it is to come up in Baltimore City. And frankly, these are a lot of really good kids. And they learn how to work in partnership in miraculous ways. Even sometimes the staff from the William Donald Schaefer House were saying, you know, rival gangs will be on crew. And by the end, because you have to work in partnerships to flip these heavy mirrored panels to become our walls.
So kids do them here. Where do they do them?
we have an off-site place that we rent, and then they come back here, and we have the Dunbar High Band, a high school band, and we do a graduation ceremony, and they get lifelong membership, so they have a place where they always belong, and they can come show their children, their children's children, what they did on these walls way into the future. Wow. Because there's a lot of museums make busy work for kids that get thrown away. And so I want you to know that they're not just beautiful walls. It's a beautiful intention for the city, for the kids of Baltimore City.
It's a shame that it's not funded now, that it's not going on actively. Is that right?
Well, we're going to start it up. We have three of the matching grants, and we're waiting for one from the Baltimore Mediation Council grant. So hopefully that will come through. And then all the other pieces we've already assembled. Thank God.
That's amazing. The story behind this, I just love this piece. This is just the idea
it's
that...
gorgeous, isn't it? And the power of the moon. See how the waves are coming out of the moon. Because we all know, like, at full moon, there's more murders, for example, but there are also more births.
Right.
You know, it's a heavy...
More madness. Love making and murders.
Well, easy for you to say as a man. Well, to think of birth as love making. I think that's heavy lifting for the women, you know? So.
I think that's probably true. Only a man can say what I said.
Yeah. Oh, and did you know our egg out there that's covered in mirrored images?
Yeah.
They're not just pretty, but they're inspired by the images from the Hubble Space Telescope of dying galaxies and birthing new stars and nebula. So everything on our 1.1 Inner Harbor campus has meaning. And again, on 7 Thursday nights this summer, we're opening up the whole museum after 5 o'clock. We stay open late till 9 for free, and then we have our outdoor movies. But
oh,
if you
that's
want,
right.
Yeah,
right.
All family, so bring your lawn chairs or a blanket, you know. And we can seat up to 2,000 people on Federal Hill.
Yeah, people sit all over the grass.
All the way over. Right. And then the screen line is, the sight and the sound is pristine. And that's the Hughes Family Theater. And now the next thing that we have coming up is probably the most, it's been twice the front page feature of the Wall Street Journal. How about that? And it's a race for everything from school children. We've had people in their 80s as well as 5-year-olds who are very strong because you have to pedal your kinetic sculpture for 15 miles all around the city of Baltimore and then float over the harbor. It's kind of like Tom Sawyer meets I don't know who, probably, you know, Amelia Earhart, because you could practically drown, but you have to wear, you know, we have to make sure you have your preserver on. But it's we're have one of the biggest races in the 15 years it's been going on. It was founded by Hobart Brown, a hippie who said, gee, if there's an apocalyptic scenario, we'll still have our legs and we can get around. And so you'll see these giant, you know, everything from Fifi the pink poodle to a platypus or all different kinds of sculptures of all kinds of things that go 15 miles all around the city streets of Baltimore this first Saturday of May. Every year now, get here at 9 o'clock and watch everybody in costume and all the things. And we do testing to make sure they can float. That's the one thing we demand, you know. And there are school groups. In fact, the Gemesee School has made it a core part of their curriculum. Several other schools as well, because you know it involves engineering and imagination and costume maker and flotation. A sense, a little bit of styrofoam will float a heck of a lot of weight.
Amazing. So do they pedal from here to the water and then go into the water?
Well, it's a route where they have to go up Federal Hill, up the cobblestones. It's a really fierce race, but it's not who finishes first.
It's who
finishes dead center. The mediocre award's the highest award.
Good. I should enter this race then.
Oh, you've never been mediocre, and I know you almost your whole life. So it's just the happiest race. And you know how when the harbor gets taken over by the Volvo race and everybody has these, you know, gazillion-dollar boats with
right.
the grace, matching gray sail. It's one thing. It's pretty. But this is anybody who wants to get on our website, you know, www.avam.org, and look at the rules. You should start, like, now for next year. But you can, with a punch of, you know, like an old bicycle and imagination and a little bit of flotation work, you can build yourself something that, even if you break down, if you continue to even carry your vehicle, you can get the Golden Dinosaur Award for the first two breaks down. It is so full of love. And it takes us about 150 volunteers to pull off the race.
Wow. What year is this going to be?
It's number 15 this year.
Wow. May the 4th.
I believe it's the 4th. It's the first Saturday.
It's Saturday, yeah. So I had an idea that I should get the folks in the res to join the Kinetic Race next year. And then we can drive their vehicle. I'll go out there and get a truck and we'll drive it out.
You could be naked except for your serape. It would be a Mark Steiner vehicle.
Nobody wants to see a 67-year-old man naked.
Oh, I don't know. I think your Valerie is still very smitten with you.
Hi.
Hello.
Okay, so here we introduce something that you are good at. Every year, this National Museum, the American Visionary Art Museum, picks one grand theme that has always bedeviled or inspired humankind. And this year, we're doing the art of storytelling. And the second part of that title is Lies, Enchantment, Humor, and Truth. And we partnered with the amazing McComas family, who lost their daughter Grace last year to mean storytelling, to bullying. And Grace's Law was passed. And I have so much respect for that entire family. So the first thing we look at is something in Hebrew, in Jewish tradition, is called Lashon Hara. And it's akin to murder when you say really bad things about another human being. And so we have partnered with Frank Warren. Frank is the creator of Post Secret. In the last, six shows, I have mined with him. He has a beautiful eye. When I tell him our themes, he looks and finds postcards that are true confessions anonymously sent to him of various aspects. And bullying, he has incredible secrets he shared with us in this show, both from those who have been bullied, but very revealingly from people who do bully. And you can come and see them with me. I blackmailed my married lover so I could sleep with her 16-year-old daughter, too. Or my husband buys me lots of gifts for Christmas to make up for the abuse. Or I'm scared to have your baby because of the way you yell at our puppy. But there's this sweet one. In high school, I was bullied. A year later, he died. I never got to forgive him. It's very interesting.
And where did these come from?
From the Post Secret project that Frank Warren, another Marylander, started. And he's now had 5 best-selling books. Our collaboration on the secrets that have to do with how people feel about religion and God made number one for 2 weeks. I wrote the foreword to it in collaboration with our All Face Beautiful show. But it made 2 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
He's a doll to work with. Here's a secret we've used for 2 years. I bullied so many kids in high school for being gay. Now I'm 20 and I realized I'm gay too, and I'm the loneliest person in the world. I'm so sorry. So it's every realm of what a human being can honestly say. But guess what? Guess what the number one secret he gets is? I pee in the shower. From all over the world, there are guilt-ridden people who pee in the shower. Is that why do you live? So I love that. I know you've never done that.
No, of course I have never done that.
So we are opening night for the 6,000-person American Alliance of Museums convention from 64 countries. And they're so excited to be with us on their opening night.
When is that?
That is May the 19th, and it's a Sunday night. And what's so interesting is we've suggested a program they've loved to say, what are the six words, what's your most unforgettable museum experience? And the richness of hearing people's experiences in not just museums, but zoos and, aquariums and history museums. Mine was as a little girl going to where the Hirshhorn now is. I saw formaldehyde, these are my 6 words, formaldehyde jar, Dillinger's penis, wow, wow. Because I couldn't believe they were making little kids go to Washington to see this. It was right next to a beaker full of an elephantitis leg and a two-headed pig fetus. And that's all I remember from the day. Oh, do you know this guy? Alan Hicks is a local. And he is an artist, and he does this. now that looks a lot like the Seal of Baltimore, but it's not a direct copy.
Madman or Genius Department.
Etc., yes, right? Yeah. And they're magnetized, and it goes on his white trucks, and he hasn't paid parking, or and he gets when there's like a big art festival, and there's nobody who can park anywhere near it, like the summer art fest. What's that wonderful program?
Artscape.
Yeah, he gets waved in all the time to park with the city vehicles. It's hilarious.
Oh, so I see. So he's not really a city worker at all.
Oh, no, not at all. And we actually sell these in our gift shops, but don't tell. This is called She Done Me Wrong.
A cleaver in the head.
There's so many good things from Chris Roberts, Antio. I like this. She has one called Good Intentions Gone Bad, and Swerving for Squirrels, where the car goes into a thing, or Low Flush Toilets. You end up just keep on flushing them. It's very, very funny. But then it gets us to the embroideries over here that people have flown in from all over the world to see, of Esther Krinitz, who survived as a little girl in Poland the Holocaust, and did so with no bitterness, and made only for her children, her two daughters and her grandchildren, the story in embroidery, how she survived. And at first she just did how beautiful.
Oh my God.
They had no, in the middle of rural Poland when she was growing up, there was no electricity. And the Jewish farmers got along great with the Catholic farmers. They swam and their kids played together and they brought in the crops. But then the Nazis, five of them on horseback, came in September 1939. And they saw her bearded, religious leader grandfather, as a simple country guy, and they beat him up, and they took a saber, and they cut his beard. But at first, it was just like hooliganism. And it shows here in the next 3 years how her life in Poland advances to the final solution, and how only she and one sister will survive. But never does she have hatred in her heart for anyone. But here she's still, by 1941, able to take her cows to good pasture near the river. And through the trees, she sees she's near a prison camp for the Jewish boys. And they're beaten so hard as they work on the dam for the Nazis. And when they get too exhausted, they're led into the birch fire forest and shot. And all of this is depicted in one incredible embroidery, but look how much she loves nature. In the most horrific scenes, the most beautiful things. If it's grass, it's a field of 12 different colored silk threads. And here she has crocheted in 3D every pine cone on a tree. And remember, she just did this for a family, not to be seen, and yet people from all over the world. We were the first to show it in its entirety. We've just brought it back for the AAM to be seen, but it went around the world, and it will travel for years. Yeah.
Is she still with us?
No. She passed like 6 months before I met her.
Oh, really?
But the film is done by a Maryland filmmaker, Nina Shapiro Pearl, and it just played on Maryland Public
Television.
These are
all her work.
This is all her work.
I mean, the work is just so stunning. I mean, the time it took, the memories she had to conjure up, the colors of the countryside, the colors of the people's clothing, all of it is just so vivid and real.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
She's very intuitive, and how she, and you hear,
wow,
see how
I
juxtapose like the wisdom of Howard Zinn.
My dear friend Howard Zinn.
Oh my gosh, she's one of my all-time heroes. Yes. With you, up there with you, babe.
Historically, the most terrible things, war, genocide, and slavery, have resulted not from disobedience, but from obedience.
Yeah. Too true, unfortunately. So here she had, she saw the black clouds, and she said to her father, "Don't you have one good Christian friend in another village?" He said, "Yes, Stefan." She said, "That's all I need." So she goes to the next village. She does not obey the Nazi order to go to the train station with the rest of her family. Her littlest sister, who she's closest with, says, "Let me go with Esther. I want to go with Esther." And her mother says, "No, sweetheart, you have to stay with me. You're too young to get a job, posing as a Catholic farm girl working the farm." But and so that echo in her ears stayed with her the rest of her life. So she took the next oldest sister, Manya, and they go to her father's friend Stefan, and he welcomes them in as Hirsch's daughters, and he hides them up in the attic. But then he says, I'm sure he's getting grief from his own family, because the Nazis are checking everywhere, and he says, "Darling girls, everyone in the village knows you're here. You must leave." and he hugs them goodbye and has to send them out in the rain. And all of this is embroidered in one picture. Mm-hmm. And up here where they have to dry out their boots. And at that point, she says to her sister, "We're no longer Hirsch's daughters. We have to be Maria. I'll be Maria and you'll be Josefina. And we'll cry on the inside. We won't show our emotions on the out." And she is able to survive the war. She gets taken in by a good older Christian farmer who has a disabled wife, and she's very capable. She can sew, she can plant gardens. And here she tells an amazing story. Remember, she has this intimacy with nature, and what she sees are her bees that she keeps attack and drive off the two Nazis who come to the old farmer to ask questions. Now, her first language is not Polish, it's Yiddish, right? So she can never let the Germans know she knows exactly what they're saying, because that would tip them off. She's not a typical girl. But she went back as an old woman to visit Poland, and the house where this man had kindly taken Esther and her sister in, and the teacup that she had gotten him coffee and tea in was still there, and they gave it to her. So I put that in the show, and I made the bees kind of like a little bit more of a hero, you know. But it's very amazing. And then finally, the Russians liberate that part of Poland. She's free to go. She goes back to where she's been told a lot of the families from that area were taken, and all the boots look the same, but there were giant cabbages born on the cremated ashes from all the people who died in Majdanek. And then she sees, even when she sees that the Russians have hung Nazi officers from every tree, and she says they look like they're still alive, she has no, oh good, you know, never is there anger in her. She was such an amazing person, and she ended up having a dress shop, leaving Brooklyn to have a dress shop in Frederick, where she could be close to her daughter's children in Silver Spring. And she just had this fierce thing. Even as the mother, she didn't send the kids up in her cherry tree up in Brooklyn to pick cherries. She's the one up there sending it down to the little girls. So she's just one of these treasures that we did not lose in the Holocaust.
Wow.
Now I'll show you one more work by...
What an amazing story.
The whole exhibition talks... There's so many, many things here. I like this. The naked truth is always better than the best dressed lie. That's Ann Landers. And I do think, as you know, that truth is just amazing.
Or as Mark Twain has here, "When in doubt, tell the truth. It will confound your enemies and astound your friends."
You've been a truth teller as long as I've ever known you.
That's right.
No, you do it big time, sweetheart. So now we come here, and there's the spectacular artwork of Vanessa German, who's a young performance artist. She's born in L.A. She now lives up in the worst kind of neighborhood, giving help to the kids in the neighborhood, making her front porch a drop-in art center. And her work, look at this, like a Pieta that she has done with a river of tears coming from like a mammy character's eyes.
She's African-American, the artist?
Yes, she is. These are all her works.
I mean, these masks are like, some of them are very African, some of them are like New Orleans type masks, some of them are like the old Negro memorabilia pieces.
Yes.
I love this. Everything you need to know for your menstrual show.
Yeah, instead of menstrual. And look, when you get close, it, hear the old, can you hear?
Wow.
Playing just that first kind of notes.
And the inlay there's somebody who obviously was a slave.
Yes.
A picture.
And look at the feet, the little toes she's carved up with
the calorie shells, yeah.
Yeah, this show is just spectacular. You know, people have come from all over, and it's all different kinds of stories.
This is from Zora Neale Hurston. In this exhibit, there is no agony like bearing an untold story inside you.
Well, you've never shut up one day of your life. I know that, Mark Steiner.
This is amazing.
And thank God for the rest of us.
Her work is unbelievable.
Yes, and Vanessa German, you can go watch some of her performances on, you know, for free on the web. But she is one of the young geniuses in this world whose work is all, her work and her life is all heart-centered. And she had pieces in the Warhol Museum, and yet she just, you know, doesn't really, that's not like a... big thing for her. She's just that good that they asked for that.
That was Rebecca Hofberger, founder and director of the American Visionary Arts Museum. She took us on a tour of her museum's latest exhibit, The Art of Storytelling, Lies, Enchantment, Humor, and Truth. And we'll hear more from Rebecca Hofberger right after this brief break, so don't go anywhere. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and today we're taking a tour of the American Visionary Arts Museum with its founder and director, Rebecca Hofberger. The exhibit is called The Art of Storytelling, Lies, Enchantment, Humor, and Truth. And when we left off, Rebecca was telling us about the artists who were part of this exhibit.
Well, there's really two stories I want you to know about. One is this is an Apache elder who now lives in Cab Calloway's house with the wonderful artist Morgan Monceau. And
really?
Mm-hmm.
Here in, not in Baltimore, in...
In Baltimore.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Right west of the Maryland Institute College of Art.
Yeah.
And
I know it.
And she spends years. Look at this is her piece. I wanted a Native American presence because, many indigenous cultures, their history was so faithfully sustained through storytelling. So here are thousands of prayer beads, and she wanted people to be able to even come and paint this. And this took her several years. And it's this beautiful, huge painting on peace and the call for peace from all the spirit birds, the doves and the hawks, etc. But look what that is. That's a stealth bomber hidden in.
Oh, wow.
She's so amazing, this woman. And what's interesting, these are eaglet feathers, and of course she has the Yatehe Shona.
Yatehe Shona.
Which is walking beauty, my friend.
In Apache.
Yep, in Apache and many, but these are all prayer beads. Now, this is kind of a miraculous thing. Her grandmother, remember they were Southwest Native Americans, right, said that the northernmost rainforest on Princess Royal Island lived the white spirit bears that are not albino and they're not polar bears. They're white bears pure black parents.
In British Columbia.
Exactly. Well,
yeah, right.
So
right.
She was halfway done this. See, this is all three-dimensional real garnet crushed and diamond dust in the water. This is all, wow. You can feel this is all garnet, and these are prayer beads. So she did this.
Spirit bears, I know those bears.
Yeah. Well, did you know that there was the prophecy that she, and I guess she's in her probably early 60s, mid-60s now, she was told by her grandmother that Creator gave Spirit Bear Island to them to live in, to the bears to live in harmony for always. And if ever human beings tried to disrupt that, it would be the end of humanity. So I said, and I saw this painting, I just said, I have to have it in the show. She delivered it wet back in September when we were putting this up. And guess what? The next night, National Resource Defense Council had an email saying the government is trying to put of Canada to run a pipeline right through the middle of this. And so in my head I heard, Mark, raise an army of poets. And in 3 weeks I got Eckhart Tolle, Oprah's kind of guru poet and very spiritual man, and all these other laureates, including Maryland's Michael Glazer, including the Palestinian wonderful poet Naomi Shihab, to all give me one line of a poem, a protest poem against the idea of putting a pipeline in. And all I did was I sent them one of my favorite quotes from E.O. Wilson, who said, destroying rainforest for economic gain is like burning a Renaissance painting to cook a meal. And they came in with these powerful lines of protests, and I put it together, and we've sent this out around the world. You can pick it up on our website too, the avam.org. So it was an amazing creative act that has gone around to try to protest that we could, just for economic gain and a little bit more oil, think of destroying the rarest and most pristine. There are albino crows on this island, too. The flora and fauna is almost unlike anything anywhere else in the world. It's the northernmost rainforest of our hemisphere. And so this is our effort to try to, using the power of poets who would think, to protest that we could be so crazy to do that for our future generations.
Unbelievable. This is amazing, Rebecca. This exhibit is just unbelievable. I mean, I've always loved all your exhibits, but there's something about this one.
Well, that's because you're a master storyteller. So right across from our Truth and Reconciliation quilt, we have our collection here. I have put something that if it wasn't for Philip Merrill, who's a great, really scholar in African-American memorabilia, he found out something that should be shouted for good from the rooftops. Back 4 years before there was ever a Johns Hopkins Hospital, back in 1885, this good-looking...
1885, right? 1885, I see. Yeah.
There was a Dr. George Kennard, who was an African-American physician, and with the very first African-American, Dr. Brown, a pharmacist to have his own pharmacy, they opened a hospital, state-of-the-art, with an amphitheater around the, with a skylight on their surgical room, a medical hospital, a church, a nursing school, and most of their employees were white European-trained doctors and nurses, and it was like...
Run by black folks.
Absolutely. Yeah, very great scholars.
It.
And this is
the
way back.
The first color professional, clerical, and skilled business journal of Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm. This is all because of Philip Merrill's scholarship. And this, so I'm trying to organize a big cleanup. This building at 704 Enser Street, there's still a church on the first floor, but there was a fire to the next door. It's right across from the Dunbar Athletic Fields. And the woman pastor has welcomed that we're going to come over and we're going to figure out how to clean all the weeds, because this is a place that should be preserved. Because back when Dr. George Kennard, the African-American doctor who founded this hospital for everybody, died in 1929, the Afro-American paper said, talked about him. He was a Mason, but he said by his casket from 9 in the morning till 1 o'clock, white, black, Gentile Jew, wobbling old men and women, children hardly able to see above the rim of the casket, pass by to pay him homage. So this is a moment of golden time, because, you know, the sad thing is that Johns Hopkins, as a Quaker, had a beautiful vision, much like Dr. Kennard's. And guess what? As soon as he died, that money, it wasn't until 1963, very sadly, that Hopkins closed its colored ward. 1963. And, of course, you couldn't be, it wasn't until your childhood neighbor, Jack Handelsman, was the second Jewish doctor to ever be put on staff at Hopkins. And that wasn't until the 60s.
Right.
You know, so... look at this prosthetic leg that was found under pigeon poop inside. That's why we really want to have a real cleaning. In the ruins of on the top floor where the roof has collapsed, that we're trying to clean up of this.
Wow,
and
look at that.
Isn't it the most beautiful prosthetic leg from like 1900 with the little ankle? And this company that made it is still the leading person in prosthetic legs. Isn't that incredible?
For the idea that this amazing hospital was started by a black man in Baltimore.
Yes, and was
before
so
Hopkins
beloved.
Even began.
Yeah, because you have to remember, like in the early days, Irish and Italians weren't really welcomed either. And I have a girlfriend, you know, Rashida, very much from Womworks. Her mother was very light skinned, but her grandmother was really light skinned and went into labor with her mom. And they started to deliver her because she was right near Hopkins. And then her husband heard that she was in labor, ran in to find her. They looked up and realized they had made a mistake and that she was birthing in the white ward. And instantly did not let her continue birthing, took her while she was in the middle of birthing on a gurney down to the colored section. And so I think it would be really helpful if, much like Brown University, if Johns Hopkins would do a kind of a community healing by just speaking the truth and going and building on its very, I hope, good intentions, and I believe sincere going forward. But I don't think that can be brokered without looking honestly at the at their past.
I agree completely.
And actually, just like Frederick Douglass's last wife was white, the two wives, not at the same time, of Dr. Kennard were white. Back in, this is 1885, when that was against the law. But his his persona, his care for others. He also had a magnificent convalescent home in Anne Arundel County. This is back 1885. So sometimes we think, oh, we're getting, you know, less prejudice now. I think good people always, from all times. And one of the things I wanted to do in this storytelling show is not dismiss bad behavior in prior centuries as just being, oh, well, that was the time. Because quite frankly, right-minded people almost always have done the right things around the world. Regardless of, and they're disobedient when there is a bad law, just like in the, you know, the righteous of Germany who realized Hitler was doing something totally inhumane and went against the law and risked their own lives to save people who were under threat of extermination. And then finally, for kids, we have the enchantment room and the fairy houses.
What do you mean for kids?
You're right. And it really, look at this Linda Barry quote up here. I love this. She was the first girlfriend of Mac Groening and a cartoonist and a wise woman. She wrote, "We don't create a fantasy world to escape reality. We create it to be able to stay."
Mm-hmm. Amen.
And we'll have maybe Einstein have the last word?
Sure.
If you want your children to be brilliant, read them fairy tales. But if you want them to be geniuses, read them more fairy tales.
Amen to that. Rebecca, I appreciate you taking all the time. I know you're busy, Kinetic Race coming up and everything else.
Yes. Oh, again, please, everybody come down that first Saturday in May. At 9 o'clock, we start gathering. Everybody's in costumes. Just, it's the best feeling. You make sure you see the blessing of the feet that we have from our own defrocked monk. And then everybody goes, and it's school groups, young, old, welders, professional artists, totally visionary artists, first-timers, housewives. It's something else. And then it's an all-day race, and that you can get more information on just going to our site on Kinetic Sculpture Racing, Baltimore.